Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. I want to remind you, and attention to all area jazz vocalists and musicians, you're invited to a historic photo shoot, A Great Day in Baltimore, Monday, September 13th, 9 a.m. at the War Memorial Plaza in downtown Baltimore. The photo shoot will bring together local and regional musicians in Baltimore's rich musical history, past and present, to support jazz in the city. Proceeds from the photograph will benefit the UB Blake Cultural Center's jazz workshop programs. For more information, contact Mia Miata at 443-204-1730. That's 443-204-1730. We are now joined in studio by Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger. And Dutch has been in Congress since 2003. Before that, he was Baltimore County Executive. Before that, he was a county councilman. And it's good to see you, Dutch. How are you?
Good. Okay, Mark. Haven't been here for a while.
It's been too long.
Well, you know what happens when you go from local government to Congress. You're not at home as much as you'd like to be. You're not closest to the people, as we say. So I do miss that.
I know you do.
Right.
And I want folks to join us here at 410-319-8888 to join in this conversation.
Where'd you go to high school, Mark?
I went to City.
Oh, good.
For a while. 410-319-8888 to join. We were there at the same time. You were playing football when I was there.
And lacrosse and swimming.
And, see, I remember all
but
that.
I was also getting a good education.
Well, City was,
it was
a
great
very special place.
Was when I was at City, you and I were at City, I think that was the best of integration, where you had a white Christian, Jewish, and African-American all coming together. And we were proud of the school. We all wanted to be Poly. It was really a great time to grow up. The Colts were doing great.
My grandson United. Goes to Poly now.
Oh, no, Mark. Mark.
My grandson's a senior at Poly now.
Oh, well, it's good because we do need STEM education, and we do need to learn that. But
And you were right. That was a time when Baltimore City College, I mean, kids came from across the racial, religious, and class, economic class exactly. spectrum of our city. Rich kids there, poor kids there. It was a very different kind of place.
But it was really positive because to get good grades, it was acceptable. You know, you were accepted. It was pride in the school, and everyone wanted to do well and wanted City to do well. And just like you wanted to win an athletic contest against Poly, you wanted to beat Poly in scholastic issues also.
That's true. Mm-hmm. So, Dutch, I have a lot of things I want to ask you, but you have a special reason for coming on that your staff was talking about today. Tell us a bit about what's going on.
Well, we announced today federal monies. It was $1 million to really help in the area of STEM education.
Which means
science, technology, engineering, math, you know, all of those different arenas. We are in a technical world now, and in order to prepare our younger generation, our students, they need to know math and science and engineering. We have a lot of issues out there concerning threats. Cybersecurity is a major issue. One of the committees I'm on is the Intelligence Committee, and I chair the Technical Tactical Committee that oversees all of NSA, all of the space program, and we deal with the issue of cybersecurity. And that is really basically a lot of people don't even know what it is. It's mm-hmm. using computers and attacking our computers and attacking it could attack our bank accounts, our grid systems, whatever. And we know Russia and China have been attacking us for years. We know that China, and this is not classified anymore, that attacked our NASA and got a lot of $1 million worth of information that was classified about our space program. And we weren't up to where we should have been as far as security. We are now. I think Russia, France, and China, and the United States are the four countries that are probably the most dominant now in dealing with the issue of cyber and cybersecurity. But it's all about science, math, and technology. I'm on the board of the Naval Academy. That's an excellent institution, one of the best in the world, as is West Point and Air Force. And one of the things that I've tried to work with them on is to make sure that they focus on the issue of cybersecurity. And one of the goals at the Naval Academy is by the year of 2013 is to have close to 65% to 70% of all their graduates graduating in the area of math, science, and engineering.
So, this clearly has a lot to do with the future of this country. I mean, because this is where the world is going, and I think this is where our future is. Where do I begin this? When you were saying that, one of the things I was thinking about was that we're in a place where people use a lot of rhetoric about trying to get away from the use of fossil fuels.
Right.
I was with somebody over the weekend who is a huge supporter of many things, and he's a man of means, and he has a Tesla, which is this electric car. It costs a lot of money. And I was talking to the technician who was working on the car when he came over to his house. And it's a very simple automobile, just eight moving parts, with a battery that lets a car go over 300 miles in, you know, in one shot before they have to refuel it. Four costs like 4 cents a watt or something to make the car go again. So it costs almost nothing to fuel the car. But we don't do something. We're not doing things in this country, it seems, to turn the tide so that our grandchildren and great grandchildren, our grandchildren by the time they're our age, let's say, are going to be living in a country where fossil fuel is the last part of our fuel system instead of the first part of our fuel system. So the technology on batteries and how to build new cars and solar and gas and how to refit the grid and rework the computer systems that make the grid and all those incredible things that could put tens of thousands of Americans, if not more, to work and secure a future, we're not paying attention to that. We're still giving all this money to subsidies for oil. And, you know, oil workers can have their job until they retire because we're not going to get away from oil for the next 30 years. But we're never going to get away from it in 30 years if we don't start making a transition now. And I don't see us doing that. And it made me think of that because you're talking about technology and science, but that is the key to all of that. That's a piece
of the key. Well, the first issue that you talked about, you've raised, is you have to deal with the issue of education. You have to make sure that we educate our young students starting in preschool. I think tests have shown that preschool is just as important as elementary and then middle, high, and hopefully college. So that's step one. And then we need to identify people that have aptitudes, especially in the math, science, and engineering, because that's what's going to make us competitive with China and Russia. And to give you an example of where we're starting to fall behind in the United States is that China last year graduated over 400,000 students in the area of math, science, and technology and engineering, STEM. We graduated about 65,000. That's a big discrepancy between the two. Now, the good news for us is that our curriculum is still superior. But what's starting to happen now is that because of our immigration laws, people that would come over to the United States and go to Harvard, Yale, MIT, or some of our more scientific institutions of higher learning, aren't coming anymore because they can't stay and because of the immigration issues. So I think we have to really focus first on education. What I really came in here today was about the students that we were focusing on in the fifth grade to get STEM education. And this money that we were able to get, and Senator Mikulski and Cardin and Cummings, we all worked together as a team in Maryland to bring it to this region, is to get students interested, excited about learning math, science, and technology. And what we had today, and it's being coordinated by Towson University, working with the local school systems, city, counties, and whatever, we have an astronaut who's heading up this program who has been to space and is really going to try to make STEM learning exciting. And when we started out today, I was the MC, and I asked how many people know about astronauts. So not many people raised their hands. In the old days, astronauts were just as popular as NFL football players. Well, when we finished our program, I talked, Bob Corrett from Towson University talked, one of his provosts talked, and then the astronaut talked. And he explained space and how important it was. And we talked about how when Russia came out with Sputnik, we responded because we were so concerned they were going to control the space. We came out with a program in 12 years that put us on the moon. We actually created the science of rocket science. And it was very positive. Our country all came together, you know, when we put a man on the moon. But when this astronaut told the story and he had a little rocket and talked how they take off and what astronauts do and how in space, you know, they how they live and how they have to do certain things. When in the end of the program, the fifth graders that were there, and they were smart fifth graders who are going to be in the STEM program, how many people now want to be an astronaut? And probably about 10 or 12 hands went up. So it's really STEM is important to get students excited, to get them to learn, to let them know the basics, so that in the future we'll be able to compete in the area of technology. And what you were talking about, you said how a simplistic issue. But in order to be able to find and say you see that something simplistic works, you have to know the technical side of it too. Because in the end, when you manufacture a product, it has to work. But we have so much to deal with now in technology, how technology controls our grid systems, our banking systems, our space systems. There's just so much there. And if we don't train our future generation, then we will be behind other countries that are doing this very aggressively.
And I know we're going to keep coming back and forth to this STEM, the money that you brought to the state that you're working on. I think that is really important, and I'm glad it's here along with the other money for Race to the Top that's going to kind of help transform.
Because we are falling behind in the STEM education. That's why we're focusing on
this. Yes, we are falling behind. But I what I'm trying to ask you, though, is another political question, which has to do with why the U.S. Congress continues to want to subsidize the old way and not put most of the money into where the future is as opposed to where the past is. In other words,
Give me examples because I think we're moving forward.
We know the disaster in the Gulf was horrendous.
Okay, that was lack of oversight. That was lack of regulation, even possible corruption.
And you can't shut down the oil wells in the Gulf because we're going to get the oil from the Gulf. But what I'm saying is nobody seems to be in government at this moment, seriously, is talking about how you invest our taxpayers' money into changing the way we get our energy. And it fits into STEM in that it's going to take a technological power to do it, but we're not going to do it unless we stop subsidizing oil and start subsidizing
all the other. Well, I agree
with you.
Let's talk politics. There are those of us in the House of Representatives that received a lot of criticism for our vote on the energy bill. I come from energy because in Congress you specialize. I specialize, and I'm an appropriator, and I'm on the Intelligence Committee. And as a result of this bill, the whole purpose of the energy bill is cap and trade. The purpose of cap and trade is to give incentives to business to have new technology that makes a difference with the environment and to deal with the issues of global warming and all those issues that exist out there. And if you don't, then you're going to have to pay. So eventually the incentive is to do that. Where I come from as a member of the Intelligence Committee is that we have the biggest transfer of wealth probably in the history of the world and in the world right now. Close to $400 billion of American dollars go to these countries that are unstable, they're giving us oil. And a lot of this money, unfortunately, a lot of it is going to our enemies and going to Al-Qaeda and other areas. So this energy bill was a bill that gave incentives for people to invest in other forms of energy. Extremely important to do that. Because if you want business to do something, you can't mandate it. You know, we are a democracy and a free enterprise. You give them tax incentives to move forward. So this bill had a lot of positive issues. It would have created thousands of jobs. Researching in the area, you know, whether it's wind, solar, you know, coal is usually a bad word in the environmental community, but now we have technology out there where we can reduce coal to natural gas, and which helps us and makes us more independent. But the technology isn't there yet, but a bill like this might give incentives for people to do these type of things. So, you know, it's important that we understand now that unfortunately that bill was passed in the House and it didn't go in the Senate. And now a lot of us at election time are being criticized because of our vote for that bill. That was a positive bill. You also have to look at the issue of nuclear. I've talked to the environmental communities about this for a long time. Nuclear is extremely important if we do it the right way. Look at France. They're 80% independent. France has done a lot of work for us. The two issues that I look at in the nuclear area are, number one, safety and security, and number two, recycling. And France has been able to deal with both of those issues.
Well, I think France and everybody else is still struggling with the issue of recycling. I mean, if there's one issue with nuclear energy, it has to do with the you can build a plant that's safe, perhaps.
Three Mile Island was not considered safe, but it still worked. Now that thank goodness we have new technology.
Well, what we do with the spent material from those reactors, that's still not.
Well, I think the technology is there, and I think France has developed it. And that's why right now we have in the state of Maryland, Constellation is partnering with France because they have the expertise to do that. And nuclear, you know, deals with the issue of fossil fuel. But it's something in the area of environment, in the area of energy. We have to put these issues on the table and research them and develop them. And that's where money needs to go. This bill, the environmental bill that we passed in the House, did a lot of that, but unfortunately went to the Senate and it didn't go anywhere.
I hope we have time to ask this question and answer before we have to go to a quick break and come right back. When you look at the politics of America right now, it's this election looming in front of us.
Oh, yeah. Every 2 years now.
Every 2 years now. That's right. You don't face a lot of opposition in this.
You always face opposition. And right now you have to do the best you can to communicate with your people because right now people are upset in this country. They're frustrated. They're frustrated with the oil spill. And they're frustrated because of the lack of jobs. They're frustrated because they don't know whether or not the money used for stimulus creates jobs or whether cutting taxes. So there's a lot of anxiety out there. And rightfully so, we in Congress have not done the job to communicate the facts on a lot of issues where sometimes the facts are not really what they appear to be. Also, the other issue is partisan politics. Sooner or later, our forefathers created a great system of government between checks and balances. But right now, as an example with the health care bill, the bill would have been a better bill if the Republicans would have been at the table. But their leadership said, don't get involved. We stay together as a team and we'll win the majority back. And that's what's wrong right now is the issue of not working what's right for Americans. And that's extremely important.
Well, I thought it was my theme music saying it's time to take a break.
I think that's what it was.
It's your theme music saying you have a phone call. Mm-hmm. Okay. Are we about to take a break?
I didn't turn the phone off.
So let's take a very quick break. We're going to come right back with Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger, who represents the 2nd District here in Maryland. He's been there since 2003. I want to remind you, on the way to this break, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back. Join us at 410-319-8888 with Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger.
Grab your notepad, your laptop, your BlackBerry, and join me, Omar Muhammad, your small business insider, on Briefcase Radio. Each week, my team of small business insiders offer hands-on advice, tips to help you start and improve your business plan, and insight on capital to help you start or expand your business. Your task? Tune into Briefcase Radio every Sunday at 9 p.m. on WEAA 88.9 FM.
The Latino Providers Network hosts the Maryland Latino Summit, Turning Obstacles into Opportunities, hosted by WEAA's Guillermo Brown, Saturday, September 4th, 8:30 a.m. till 4 p.m. at the Towson University's University Union. For more information, 410-704-2051. This is a public service of public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
This is Leadership in 60 with Justin Jones Fosu, giving you powerful tools to strengthen the leader in you. Excellence is a place where good is not good enough. Justin Jones Fosu. I've been on a recent quest to uncover the secrets of everyday excellence. I've been viewing what pro athletes do, what Olympians do, and what people who are at the top of their field do. It is usually not that they are that much better than us, but they take what they do very seriously. While others are sleeping, they are running, riding, or doing. While others are wasting away time on endless entertainment, they are strategizing, planning, and excelling. Are you good at something? If so, that's no longer good enough. Begin steps toward excellence today, for today is the day, and now is the time. For more powerful tools in leadership, visit WEAA.org. Leadership in 60 is brought to you by Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Public Radio, 88.9 FM, promoting the preservation and forward progression of jazz, music, and culture. WEAA, Baltimore.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're about to continue our conversation with Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger. But first, we've got to turn this over to WEAA Traffic. See what's happening on the roads, get you home safe, and come right back, so stay with us.
Support for WEAA is provided by REI, offering gear and clothing at local REI stores or REI.com.
Heavy traffic remains on 95 northbound. Traffic this time is service of Children's Advil. And what we have is that accident still getting some attention northbound at 175. Delays prior to 216. Does look like it's in the clearing stages. Other problems on the JFX. Had that disabled vehicle right at the Baltimore City County line off to the shoulder. Actually, now it's even gone. The Harrisburg Expressway remains heavy from Mount Carmel down to Shawan. Earlier debris there has been cleared. Over in Ellicott City, Old Frederick, both directions of Bracken Drive shut down. Utility work there. We're also looking at accidents along North Point at Kane and now Pulaski Highway at Rossville Boulevard. That problem still getting attention. Philadelphia clearing an accident at New Forge Road. Matt Tacka, Baltimore area traffic.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Heart Center, where expert cardiologists, cardiac surgeons, nurses, and support staff have built a nationally recognized program focused on prevention, treatment, and rehabilitation. For a virtual tour of the Heart Center, you can go to www.umm.edu/heart. We are here in the studio with Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger, 2nd District Congressman here in the state of Maryland. 410-319-8888 is the number. You don't have to talk about STEM. He wants to. You can know about anything you like. 410-319-8888. Let's launch back very quickly.
Okay, sure.
People just tuning in what this STEM thing is and why you're so enthralled about what's coming to Maryland, what you've done here.
Well, first thing, because I am in the Intelligence Committee, I represent NSA, and as we in the 95 corridor in Maryland, from Fort Meade, NSA, up to Aberdeen, will probably be what they call the SINGIT capital of the world, which means in intelligence you have human intelligence, which is what CIA does, getting assets and informants and collecting human information. SINGIT is what we do pursuant to what NSA does, what our space programs do, and a lot of technology. You need to have PhDs. We have a huge amount of PhDs who work at NSA in the area of mass science and technology. And that's the future of a lot of where we're going to go. And as a result of the BRAC coming into really the 2nd Congressional District, I probably will have more high-paying jobs come to my district because of the base closures and other areas that are
Aberdeen
coming.
Aberdeen is in your district?
Aberdeen's in my district also, than any other place in the country. We're going to have over 60,000 jobs coming, high-paying jobs, as a result of these jobs coming to Fort Meade and NSA and also Aberdeen. Aberdeen happens to be probably one of the top testing Army bases in the world, if not the country, for the Army, testing a lot of technology, tanks, anything that we use in the area of the military. But with those 60,000 high-paying jobs, that brings these people will live here, and they will spend money. That will create other jobs, and it's just a multiplier effect. You know, whether they go to restaurants, whether they buy clothes, whether they go to pharmacies, all these issues really help. The trick there, though, it's what I used to do in local government, and I'm glad I had the experience there as a county executive and county council, is that we have to make sure when we have these new jobs coming in that we do not negatively impact on our existing residential or commercial entities at this point. And that's why the planning is so important. And we need money for infrastructure and make sure we have money for schools and have money for health, all the issues that deal with 60,000 people coming to your area.
It's a lot of jobs, a lot of people.
A lot of jobs. And you know, jobs and the economy are probably the number one issue out there in the election right now, as they should be.
Well, that's why I'm going to ask you, because this is a political question again, but I 2 years ago, I think it was 2 years ago, wasn't it 2 years ago? We were in Denver. I was covering it, and you were a delegate to the Democratic National Convention. Mm-hmm. And Barack Obama spoke, and you were among many of the others dancing, cheering in the aisles. And
it was a very exciting time.
It was a very exciting moment for many people.
For Democrats.
Right. And we were next door. The Maryland delegation was right next to the Hawaii delegation, so it was kind of crazy there at that moment as well. And I wonder what you think has happened in these intervening 2 years where the Democrats, your party, could be in danger of losing the House and losing the Senate.
I think, first thing, from a political point of view, you're in office now, you're in charge, and you have to take responsibility. If you want to look at history, I think that what Obama inherited was a very difficult situation. But that's no excuse anymore, because now you're the president. You know, we had when Clinton left office, there was a $350 billion surplus. What happened is that if you're going to cut taxes, you have to stop spending. I mean, I learned that as a manager of Baltimore County, and we were rated one of the top four managed counties in the country. We got our AAA bond rating. But if you want to be fiscally responsible, you're going to cut taxes. And there's good reasons to cut taxes to stimulate, you know, the economy and spending, whatever. But you have to stop spending. Well, we were at war. And if you look at World War II as an example, the whole country came together. People were sacrificing. The only people sacrificing in this war right now are the families and the troops. That's it. I mean, you know, who is really sacrificing this country other than those two? So what do? We end up at war. We're spending $1 billion a day on the war. And then in order to pay for the tax cut, we're borrowing money from China and other countries. And that's creating this huge deficit. Now, getting to where we are now, that's no excuse. That's, you know, we ran for office. We're in charge now, and we have to deal with it. And I think the reason that we have such a difficult time now with the country and people are mad, first thing, Americans want to be number one. They could not understand why we couldn't deal with the oil spill a lot quicker. We should be able to fix this right away. And so every morning you wake up, this nonstop media, this is not right for the United States. This is wrong. And yet if you look at the history and why that occurred, is because we didn't really manage it correctly. We didn't have the we let certain people in our government who probably let things go that shouldn't have gotten go. So there's a reason why that happened. But getting more to jobs and the deficit, Obama, we were excited. The country was excited. Something new. We were coming through a difficult time. We knew we had a large deficit. We were at war. People were upset, and they saw a new beginning. And Obama is a great communicator. He's a communicator like Bill Clinton, like Reagan. And I think what happens, and it happens in politics, it happens in sports, when you raise expectations and people are excited and then you don't deliver, and that's what's happened. And this economy was so bad. We almost went into a depression. We could never talk about it at the time. But if we didn't do some of the stimulus packages and if we didn't help the car industry, we could have really been in a lot worse shape than we are. But you don't come out of these situations overnight. And I think the frustration that the job issue is there, that Democrats are continuing their message. We have not controlled our message properly. The message has been controlled by a lot of media, has been controlled by a lot of people, not all people, get their information from, and it's saying this is bad, this is wrong, the stimulus package. Well, the stimulus package has worked. In the state of Maryland, the stimulus has saved over 14,000 jobs. I'm a big infrastructure person. The stimulus money is going to fix a bridge that was deteriorating and had to be dealt with on the Baltimore Beltway at Liberty Road, $25 million. That's going to create jobs. So, you have to create jobs. Now, we had a dip because the numbers went up, but then they went down because the stimulus workers aren't there. So there was a dip again. And a lot of what we have to deal with in the economy is you have to, especially in Wall Street, you have to have confidence in where you are. And the negative news does not help the confidence in investors. And then people get mad. Senior citizens who 401ks in their retirement and they've lost half their 401k. You can see why they're upset. So government has to come in and has to rely on the expertise of different people that advise us, both right and left, and come together and make a decision. Well, everything that the Democrats, not the Democrats, did it all right. There's no bill that's a perfect bill either. But healthcare, had to deal with healthcare. Healthcare was an issue that of every $6 an American spent, $1 went to healthcare. The average family pays $13,000 a year for healthcare. And most people don't understand that because their healthcare is subsidized. Out of that $13,000, $1,100 went to pay for the uninsured. So we had to deal with the issue of healthcare because if we didn't, the experts told us that in 10 years that healthcare would cost $25,000 a family instead of $13,000. We couldn't sustain that as a country.
But one of the things I want to ask you, Dutch, is that what you were just describing here. I mean, we did have a stimulus package, but we have, from everything I've read, 70% of the people in this country are either unemployed, stop looking for work, underemployed, and even more people are working at jobs now. And the latest stuff that just came out in the New York Times today in a big article are working for far less than they ever made before. And we talk about a stimulus package. I think one of the things, maybe reasons people are so angry in America is because they're not seeing a stimulus package going to the things you just described, mm-hmm. which is, in a massive way, the infrastructure of America, putting people back to work to stimulate the economy. But this is, I think that's one of the reasons people are so upset. They saw this stimulus package, whether there are all the complexities of where it worked and didn't work, but seen as a Wall Street stimulus package and very little trickle down. And a lot of people are unnerved about where we are. And don't seem to be able to get a stimulus package, as we always put it, from Main Street in popular terms.
Well, I think that's a good point, and that goes to the issue of why we haven't been able to put our message out there that where people would understand what we were really doing. What happened in the very beginning, and I'll give you a story, that Nancy Pelosi got a call from the Treasury Secretary at Paulson and from Bernanke and said, I have to see you right away. She said, well, how about next week one day? They said, we have to see you today. We could be in a depression. All of a sudden, we were told that we had to move forward with some type of stimulus where there'd be a tremendous drop in Wall Street. Bush was in office then. The Republicans were in the majority. And we said, Nancy said, well, I'll get certain Democratic votes. You get the Republican votes. Now, I rely on my staff a lot, but I also rely on outside friends and experts. And I have friends in the financial area, one who works for a major bank in California that I went to college with, and he is in charge of investments for this bank. And I asked him his advice, and he's a very strong conservative Republican financial person. He said we must vote for the stimulus package, or the stock market is going to crash, and it's going to hurt our country. We could be in really bad shape. So it turned out we put the first stimulus package to a vote, and the Republicans didn't deliver, even though Bush wanted it and he was president. He couldn't deliver his party. Well, the stock market dropped to the highest level it has since the Depression. Well, that was a wake-up call. So the bill came back again, and it was passed. But then it was some foreign territory that how do you get banks to start lending money? I happen to have another philosophy. I think you look at history. I've talked to Geithner personally about, now the Secretary of Treasury, about look at what happened in the savings and loan crisis. In the savings and loan crisis, I think Ronald Reagan did a positive thing, is he created a trust, the Reservation Trust, I think they called it. And the government came in, the only ones that had the money to do it, and they bought the bad paper from all the savings and loans. That allowed the savings and loans then to have their books cleared and they could start lending money again. That paper that was bought by the government then became worth something. And when the economy turned around, that we got our money back. Now, Geithner liked that plan, but he said we could never get the other side to come in because it would be more what would be called stimulus money, and it wouldn't happen. So we have gone through a long period of time, the car industry. If we wouldn't have stepped in, we wouldn't have American cars anymore. And there were 4 million people impacted by the car industry. That could have put us into a depression again. We could never talk about depression, but that was very close. Now the car industry is doing well, and just in the Baltimore area, Allison Transmission. I helped bring that to Baltimore County. We were competing with Russia, I mean Mexico and other areas, and we lost jobs at Browning Highway. And why we got Allison to build here, General Motors, so that we used our community colleges to retrain our people at Browning Highway how to run a technological plant and compete with China and other areas. If we would have lost that, who knows if we would have had Allison Transmission or the jobs that are there.
But we only have a few minutes left here, and now people are calling in at 410-319-8888. Let's get somebody in here at any rate, a few of them.
Sure.
Diane, you're on the air. We have about 4 or 5 minutes left. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. I have a question to ask him about the adult health care through the state of Maryland. Did you know how that works? And because I have had problems with it, and I think it needs an overhaul because it doesn't really cover anything. If your doctor has to send you to a specialist, you can't go to a specialist because it's coming out of your pocket. That's why people are angry. You're right. We are angry because we are not getting the stuff that we really need. They say health care reform. This is even before Obama got into Maryland already had it. But the thing is not working because it's not worth anything. You can't get the service that you need.
Healthcare just started. Healthcare, because it impacted our society so much, we had to deal with a lot of serious issues, cost, and patient care. And the issue with healthcare now, this is really a more competitive market as far as people who are uninsured will now be insured. And it does a lot to help people. And this is where we really maybe have not gotten our message out. For instance, senior citizens, there's no pre-existing condition anymore. In the past, if you had a pre-existing condition such as cancer, you would not be able to maybe be insured again. And that's not going to happen, you know, anymore. It enhances nursing home care. It provides primary care. But more importantly, it has to do with providing, and this is what's really important, providing preventative care. And just for seniors as an example, you don't have a copay issue. You can get preventative care under this bill, which will help you with your health care down the road. Now, as far as the state's concerned, the Governor O'Malley and the state have worked very closely with us on the health care bill. And the health care bill is just starting to be implemented. It's going to take years to implement the health care bill. But in the end, if we do it the right way, if we manage it the right way, if people stop going to emergency rooms, you know, we pay $1,100 per family a year for the uninsured. That's not going to happen anymore. And competition. This is not a social bill. People say this is socialism. This isn't a social bill. Small business does well. I was able to get it in the bill. And this is one of the things that are important to me because I feel very strongly about jobs and small business, that if you have if you have 50 people or less on your payroll, you won't be penalized for not giving health care because this penalty that was in the bill could have put these businesses out of business and not create jobs.
Dutch, I wish we had more time because we have so much I want to talk to you about. I want to get you back here, come down to the hill and talk to you live from there.
Good.
How's that? We'll work
that's good.
One out.
Watch the traffic. It takes me 3 hours in the morning, 1 hour in non-rush hour.
It's not.
That's
Dutch Ubersberger, 2nd District Congressman. Thank you so much for joining us.
Mark.
I'll remind you all, it's attention to all area jazz vocalists and musicians. You're invited to a historic photo shoot, A Great Day in Baltimore, Monday, September 13th, 9 a.m. at the War Memorial Plaza. The photo shoot will bring together local and regional musicians and from Baltimore's rich musical history, support the past and present in jazz of our town. Proceeds from the photograph benefit the UB Blake Cultural Center's Jazz Workshop programs. Call 443-204-1730. That's 443-204-1730. We come back from this break. You'll hear a fascinating conversation with Ahmad Ashur Al-Khafaji, who is Baghdad's leading radio talk show host. His ear is to the ground in Baghdad. He's going to comment on the president's speech, and you can hear from the real person's perspective on the streets of Baghdad what they think about what's going on and what's going to happen to them next. Stay with us. We'll be right back.